folks well. I just got back from Eretz Yisrael, and I was there for a week with a number of other rabbis. We were there on a mission with an organization called AIEF, the American Israel Education Foundation, which is the affiliate organization with AIPAC that runs trips, usually for members of Congress, senators, congresspeople, staffers, people in government. So they asked a group of us to go to meet with various people, speakers, different things. And that's where the idea came to me when I landed in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, if the topic is relationships, how could I not talk about a relationship to Eretz Yisrael, particularly a long-distance relationship that we have with Eretz Yisrael? So I'm going to hand out these sheets, and if you just take one and send the rest along. The picture on the cover of this little source packet is actually from July 3rd, the last Monday. I took it standing on Har Hermon, and the person who is in the foreground is my colleague, Rabbi Sam Klibanoff from Livingston, New Jersey. And standing behind him, just out in the distance a little bit and pointing out over the lookout on Har Hermon, is Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Konrikus, who just ended his stint as the Dover Tzahal. He was the IDF spokesman for a few years. You used to see him always on TV, if you ever see on CNN or Fox or whatever. He was the Dover Tzahal. He just stepped down from that. His term ended. So now he's running tours and showing people different things. I also put in the inset here, just I took a snapshot on my phone just to give you an idea where Har Hermon is. I'm sure everybody here knows where it is. But where we actually were was an area that's closed to the public, or so they told us. It's right near some of the military installations that are on the top of the mountain to be able to overlook the area. In one direction is Syria. And another direction, which is where Lieutenant Colonel Konrikus is pointing, is just aimed southward. So if you look at the cover here, there's a blue dot on the inset. There's a little blue dot up here. So we're looking down south. That's the view down south. And I'm going to talk about that area today. I hope everyone has a chumash. If you don't, there are more chumashim in the back, in the corner, along up against the wall on the shelf. And you're welcome to a very civil one. Otherwise, you're not going to have a clue what's happening in the shir. So we're getting a lay of the land. Where is Syria? Where is Eretz Yisrael? Where the state of Israel's border, the Golan, etc. And of course, we were engaged in trying to understand some of the political dimensions. I had other ideas as well. That's what I'll share with you today. Flip to the inner inside a page over here, page 2. And if you turn with me in Sefer Bamidbar to yesterday's Parsha, in Parsha Pinchas, we have a lot of different elements that come to the foreground. I spoke about it yesterday in the Drasha in Shul, and picking up another theme along those lines. Page 886 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash that I hope everyone's holding in hand. We're going to get some exercise today with flipping pages. When I learn, I like to hold a sefer in hand and to see different things. And I'm going to talk about our long-distance relationship to Eretz Yisrael. But about page 886, Perichov Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, chapter 27, verse 1. Vatikravna benot tzlovchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe l'mishpachot Menashe ben Yosef. So these are the daughters of Tzlovchad. And we know that we know their names, we know who they are, everyone knows the story of them. That's the net, it tells you that they're Ve'ela, Shemot, Benotav, Machla, Noav, Choglav, Milkav, Tirtza. We know the five daughters' names. But when it gives us the lineage, it doesn't just tell us that the daughters of Tzlovchad, but Tzlovchad's father's name, his grandfather's name, his great-grandfather's name, his great-great-grandfather's name, and then it repeats, after it told you Menashe's name, it then says, L'mishpechot Menashe ben Yosef. So Rashi wants to understand why it is that there's a repetition of the word Menashe twice, why it had to say Ben Menashe. Just say Ben Menashe, Ben Yosef, or just say Ben Menashe. We would understand which Menashe it means. It can only mean one Menashe, Menashe, Ben Yosef. So Rashi explains, Lama Ne'emar. So Rashi, if you're comfortable with reading Rashi, good. If not, you'll just listen in. Lama Ne'emar, V'alokvar Ne'emar, Ben Menashe. It already said that. Elolomar lecha, Yosef chibev et haaretz. Yosef adored the land of Israel. Shenamar v'halitemet atzmotai. The last charge that he gives to the Jewish people before he leaves the world is, make sure you bring my bones up from Egypt to bury me in the land of Israel. Uvnotav chibevu et haaretz. He conveyed that through his family lineage. His daughters, not literally his daughters, but his descendants. And particularly, by the by, the whole tribe, but particularly the women are being accentuated here. It has to do with Yerusha, with the fact that their father had died and there were no sons in the family. That's true. But particularly here, Benotav Chivvu et Haaretz, Shenemar, Tanalanu Achuza, as they're going to request from Moshe in a few psukim, we want a portion, we want a hold within the land of Israel. Lamdechashu Kulam Tzadikim, we should be aware that everyone on this list, in this lineage, they're all righteous. Shekomi Shemasiv Masiv Utav Stumim Uparat Lecha Katuv Be'echad Mehem Liachsa L'Shavach Harezit Tzadik Ben Tzadik. When you have a lineage, all sorts of people's names, you don't know anything about their life story, but one of the people on the list is known to you to be righteous, then why is that person being mentioned? To tell you that everyone that emanated from them is also righteous. Yosef is a tzaddik, Manasseh is a tzaddik, his son Machir is a tzaddik, Gilad is a tzaddik, Hefer is a tzaddik, and who are the Nashim Tzidkaniot? The Benot Slavchad. They're righteous people. And if it's the opposite, if one of the people on the list is a Rasha, so then all the people are Rishayim on the list. There's a intergenerational communication of morals and of values that are communicated from one generation to the next. Okay, that's Rashi. And it tells us that there's something very special that's going on involving the Benot Slavcha. They want a share. They're from the tribe of Menasheh. Does anyone remember any other thing about the tribe of Menasheh that distinguishes them in terms of their love for the land of Israel, or some other time in the book of Bamidbar particularly that their name is singled out? What do you think? Hi, good morning.
When half of David Menasheh stayed on Abraham, so part of the reason is that they would be a good influence
right? So if you join with me, that's a perfect answer. The next source, what I did here, by the way, just so you understand what I did, instead of giving you a huge packet with all the psukim, I went with, we're going to keep turning pages in the Chumash, also so that you have it, okay, oh, I know where things are, I know how many pages I flip back and forth, some awareness of it, whatever I put in the source packet, it's because I couldn't give you also a full Tanakh, the other psukim, we're going to get to it. And that's another story, let me introduce that story. We're going to read about it this coming week in all of our shuls all around the world. The Jewish people get a request from two of the tribes, Gad and Reuven, or rather Reuven and Gad. They have a lot of livestock, and they come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, you know, we're actually pretty happy where we are right now on the east bank of the Jordan. We'd like to stay. And you just reading the psukim, it's on page 910, you can just sense, it's almost palpable, when you're reading these psukim, that Moshe Rabbeinu's like spiritual life is flashing before his eyes, right? What are you talking about? You're not going to do this because we did this already and it lasted 40 years in the desert. So you're going to come around again and you're going to announce, we'd like to stay here, not going to Eretz Yisrael? Yifsar. They explain, no, we have a lot of livestock. We're going to stay on the east bank of the Jordan, where, of course, we're still part of the Jewish people. Of course, we want to participate. What does Moshe tell them? I'm not reading it all in longhand, but, right, you have the description. They have a lot of livestock. Page 910, Pasuk Perek Lamed Bet. Pasuk Aleph, Mikne Rav, Haya, Livne Ruven, Livne Gad, Atzum Me'od, Vayiru at Eretz Yazer, at Eretz Gilad, Vihine Amakom Mekom Mikne. They see it's a great place for livestock to graze. You need a lot of land. Vayafo, Bnei Gad, Uvne Ruven, Vayomer Moshe, El Azar, Koin, Valnesiad, Elimor. They tell them a slew of places we've never heard of. Atarod, Vadivon, Vayazer, Vinimra, Vacheshbon, Vayalale, Usavam, Uznavo, Uveon, Haaretz Sherikashem, Livne Adat Israel, Eretz Mikne, Hivalavadach Mikne. You know, all these lands that we've conquered on the east bank of the Jordan, that we control them. These are great for grazing. We'd like to stay. What does Moshe say? You keep going. They say to him, we'd like to stay in this location. We don't want to go over the Jordan to the west bank of the Jordan. Very complicated politically in Eretz Yisrael. We'd rather stay here. It's simple. In Chutz Laretz, we're going to stay. And Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, you're going to do what the spies did? Can't be. So they say, no, we'll go first. We'll be at the vanguard of the conquering tribes. We'll help everyone. Then we'll come back home. And Moshe essentially agrees. He tells them that's okay. And that's a conversation between Reuven and Gad, two tribes, and Moshe Rabbeinu. What's strange is that in the midst of that conversation, and you can read it, it's 9:10, 9:12, explained, we're going to make a place now for our children and our livestock, and that we're going to set up like towns, but then we're going to send the army, we're going to go fight to conquer Eretz Canaan, then we'll come back. And Moshe agrees, page 912 in the Chumash, right? And it actually describes, we're going to go first, we'll be the Chalutzim, we'll do this, right? And They're going to set this up in Pasuk Chafei, verse 25, page 912. Vayor b'nei Gad v'nei Reuven al Moshe l'mor, avadecha yasu kasher v'nei mitzaveh. We will follow your command, whatever you say. Tapeinu nashenu mikneinu v'chol behemteinu yusham be'ari ha-Gilad. We're going to leave our wives, our children, our livestock in the cities of the Gilad, of this region on the eastern bank of the Jordan. Vavadecha yavru kol chalutz tzaveh l'fnei Hashem al milchama kasher adoni dover. That's what we're going to do. And okay, it's agreed. Set. But then, oddly enough, and seemingly inexplicably, although the explanation already just sort of came to us a few minutes ago, Moshe decides to append another tribe that was not part of this discussion in with Reuven and Gad. And that's, again, Menashe. Right? And that's, it's very strange that they should be part of that story. But he does. Look at verse 33. Vayitain lahem just mentions. They have not been mentioned at all in the story. Vayitain lahem Moshe livnei Gad livnei Reuven v'lachatzi shevet Menashe ben Yosef et mamlechet Sichon melech ha'emori v'romlechet Og melech ha'bashan ha'aretz le'areha b'gvulot arei ha'aretz saviv. If you look at the pages before, Menashe is not part of the story. Then suddenly, oh, we're going to put Menashe. So one approach is, since Menashe loved Israel so much, we're going to put, basically, you could call it an embassy of people from Shevet Menashe will be on the east bank of the Jordan because they're so connected to the land of Israel, they'll remind Reuven and Gad how much they have to stay connected. And it makes a lot of sense. Menashe ends up having, therefore, a place both on the east bank of the Jordan and on the west bank of the Jordan as well. They end up with the largest swath of land more than anybody else. Strange. By the way, the word chatzi doesn't mean literally 50%. It means a portion. A fraction. Doesn't say what the fraction is. Some fraction. But it is mysterious. And what I want to do today is to try to analyze a little bit what's going on with Shevet Menashe. I'm using the Torah of Rav Yaakov Medan, Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshivat Har Etzion, to try to understand this a little bit. I should have put in the caveat as I began. I'll say it now. This may be correct. It's possible it's not correct. And there's going to be a disturbing element to what I'm explaining, which will dawn on you at some point. But okay, maybe there's a way to explain it, and I'll try to do that. And if not, you can walk out of the chair and say, nah, I don't think it's possible. But in order to understand what this issue is and what's happening and why this is such a significant thing, that Chatzi Shevet Menashe is on the east bank. By the way, that's the cover picture. If you look down where like the Rabbi Klibanoff is standing and past him, I took the picture so I'm not in it, past him and past that spokesperson, the IDF spokesman, past it, that's the area that was Chatzi Shevet Menashe. That's where they were, on the east bank of the Jordan, right? Because we're standing on the Hermon, and we're looking south. But the Hermon is to the north. We're looking south, but south of it is not the east, west bank of the Jordan. It's the east bank of the Jordan already. You know how the Golan looks. So look with me, if you would, at another section. Because we have to understand is, why are the Jewish people on the east bank of the Jordan altogether? Right? So the easy answer is, well, they're on the east bank of the Jordan because the Torah says, when they left Egypt, what did Hashem not want to do? He didn't want to take them. Derech Eretz Plishtim, the way of the Philistines who live on the coast. So he took them another way. Then came the sin of the golden calf, the Chet Egel. Then came the Chet Meraglim. And as a result, the Jewish people wander in the desert a very long time. But somehow they find themselves going up the east bank of the Jordan to get into the land of Israel. And there's a story to be told about how and why and what happened as they make their way in the 40th year towards Eretz Canaan to go inside of it. What I want to show you today is how this looks, not just in the Psukim, but also on the map. So if you join me on page 844 in the Chumash, it's Parshat Chukat, chapter 20. At the end of the page, the last word is Vayishlach. So when is this? The 40th year. And the Jewish people are in the desert. And they send a message to someone they know very well. They send a message to the nation of Esav, a.k.a. Edom. Vayishlach, next page, 846, Moshe Malachim Mikadesh El Melech Edom. They send a message to Edom, and they say, Ko Amar Achich Yisrael Teyadatikot L'Hashem Etza'atnu. You know how much we've been through. You know the history. You know, and it keeps going. We were in Egypt, and it was very bad for us. Vayishma kolenu, he heard us. Vayishlach malach v'yitzin v'mitzrayim v'hine anachnu v'kadeis ir k'tzeg v'lecha. We're on your border right now. Okay? Now, look at the verse 17. This is very important, because if you're going to miss this, the rest of the shir isn't going to make any sense. This is the linchpin pasuk. Nabrana v'artzacha. We, the Jewish people, numbering some, call it between 2 and 3 million people, who are in the desert in a place called Kadesh, where, by the way, the Jewish people were encamped for 19 years straight. Some places they stayed one night. Kadesh, according to our tradition, 19 years. On the border with Edom, they for sure knew all the history. They're literally on the border with these people who are their brothers, quote-unquote. It's Esav and Yaakov again. We want to pass through your land. We're not going to go in your fields. We're not going to go in your vineyards. We're not going to drink from your wells. Look at what it says. Derech hamelach nelech. We're going to go on the way of the king. Lo nite yaminu smol. We won't go to the right or to the left. Ad asher na'avor gvulecha. What did they say? What did the Jewish people say? We're going to take the royal road. Everyone here has heard of Queens, New York. I had to put a little New York reference in. You've heard of King's Highway in Flatbush. Yeah? Kingsway Jewish Center. You never heard of these places? There's a highway. And the highway is named for you know, there's you got Dan Ryan and you got your, be local, the Eisenhower, right? You have all these names. Well, there was a highway in the olden days too. It was called the Derech HaMelech. It was called the King's Way. Why? Because that's the way kings would go. Because you don't want to have to climb up and down mountains and valleys. You want some kind of a beaten path that everyone goes on. It's a trail. It's called Derech HaMelech. It wasn't paved. Didn't have cobblestones even, but it was the way people went. And if you look on the map on page 2, you see on the map there's a line that bisects it in my atlas.mikra. It's actually in bright red. It goes right through the middle of the map, right here. You see there's a line? That's the Derech HaMelech. It's a highway. The Jewish people sent a message. They said, we want to walk on the Derech HaMelech. We won't go in your fields. We're not going to take your things. We just want to walk through. And the bottom of the map here, page 2, Mamlechet Edom. That's where Edom is located. That's where the tribes of Edom were. What did they respond? Vayomer elav Edom lo ta'avor bi pen b'cherev etzei likratecha. Not such a friendly response. We will come out with swords if you try to pass through our land. No way. The Jewish people say, listen, we're not going to go other than on the path, on the road. We're not going to take anything from you, not even from your water, right? No, you won't. And Edom comes out armed to the teeth to the border of Edom. They don't have a hard and fast border with a fence, but they have a border of some sort. They all come out en masse, and the Jewish people have a non-aggression, not pact, but they were told by Hashem, don't start up with Edom, don't start up with Moab, don't start up with Ammon. Three nations not to fight with. So what do the Jewish people do? They go around. Unfortunately, at that point, Aaron HaKohen passes away. You can go today in Jordan to a place that we think is Hor HaHar. People have been there. There were some anti-Semitic episodes there a few years ago, so I think people stopped going. But you can go there now. We know approximately where it's located. And it's somewhere, if you're looking on the map, down here, that there's Hor HaHar, somewhere down in this vicinity. Here, on the map, page 2. Somewhere here. And so it is that after he dies, the Jewish people, it describes how he dies, the whole thing. There's a little side story that the king of Canaan, one of the Canaanite kings who's in Arad. Everyone's heard of Arad, obviously. You know where Masada is. My son was at Masada this morning with an NCSY program. He texted me, Abba, I'm on the top of Masada. Great. The other side of Masada, there's apparently, I've not ever been there. There's a resort town called Arad. There's a hotel there. I've never been. But I climbed it the hard way when I went. But there's a place. Arad had a king, the Melech Canaan from Arad. Look at page 848 in the Chumash, verse 1. He didn't have a hotel, but he was the king there. Vayishma Knani, Melech Arad, Yoshev HaNegev, Ki Ba Yisrael Derech HaAtarim, Vayilachem Bisov Yishmi Menu Shavi. He took prisoners of war. And the Jewish people do? They fight a war against him, and they win. But they don't conquer his land. They just destroy it, and they bring back the captives that were taken. But then where do the Jewish people go? Then they have there's another unfortunate episode where they start complaining about the man, the whole business with the snakes, etc. And they finally, what happens? They leave. Look at the Chumash, page 850. And it tells you they travel to other places. Verse 10, verse 11, verse 12. They're traveling. Look at verse 12. Misham nasal v'yachanu b'nachal Zared. The entire Jewish people encamps near Nachal Zared. Where's Nachal Zared? We know exactly where it is. On page 2 on the map, there's a purple arrow. On the bottom, purple arrow, follow the arrow. There's a nachal. What is a nachal? It's a valley. There's natural water there. It's dry in the summer, but in the winter months, there's water flowing there. They're at Nachal Zared. You know why they're there? Because they had to swing out into the desert to stay away from Moab. You understand? Now what happens next? They were Nachazared. And then it says, Misham Nasau, verse 13. Vayachanu me'ever Arnon asher b'mibah yotzim gvul ha'emori, ki Arnon gvul mo'av ben mo'av uvein ha'emori. Where are they? Look at the blue line on the map, page 2. They all moved up to Arnon. And when they're at Arnon, they're at the border between Moab, who is to the south, underneath, to the south of Arnon. Again, it's a blue line, a horizontal line. I put it in blue, and then you can follow your eye. It goes till the Yam HaMelech. Is everyone with me here? Okay? Yeah. South is Moab. North is the land of the Amorites. Their king's name is Sihon. Sihon, Melech HaEmori. There's a border between the two. There's a description here in the Torah. I won't give you the whole description here. But Sihon, Melech HaEmori, and the king of Moab had a war. And Emori won. And they pushed Moab south of Arnon. South of that wadi. Of that, a wadi is a valley, a nachal. They pushed them south. So that places that used to belong to Moab now belong to the Amorites. So it's the border between the Emori and the Moavim. Remember I told you there's not allowed to be a war between the Jewish people and the Moavim. They have to avoid a war. They're going around them. That's why the nachal are known. So what happens next? What do you think happens? Page 852 in the Chumash. Page 852, verse 21. Vayishlach Yisrael malachim el sichon melchom rilimor. Ebra ve'artzach lonitem v'sadeh v'chem l'ishtem me'v'er b'derech ha'melech ne'lech ad asher navor gvulacha. Everybody knows what that means now, right? It said, we're not going to walk through your land. We're going to walk in the valley near Nachal Arnon, drink the water. They don't have a well anymore. What happened? Miriam and Neviah passed away. So what are we going to do instead? We're going to walk on the Derech HaMelech. We'll take the royal highway. We're not getting off the highway. We won't go to a rest area. We won't take any of your things. We're going to go on Derech HaMelech. What does Sichon say? Sichon did not permit them to go. But Sichon didn't respond verbally. Sichon brought the entire Amorite army to fight the Jewish people. That was the response. You want our answer? Tshuvat Chabit Sidcha. We bring the army. So what happened? Describes in the Pesukim. So the Jewish people said, well, we're not going to take it lying down. They got Tzahal together. What did they do? They fought a defensive war against the Amorite army that was coming to destroy them. Where is the war? The Torah says right here, verse 23, it says that the war took place in a place called Yatzah, and the main battle was in Yatzah. Look on page 2 on the map. The smack dab in the middle of the map by itself, it says Yatzah, right over here. Yatzah, Yatzah, it's in the middle. If I had like a big screen with a laser point, it'd be better, but we don't have that. So at least you get to see this on Shabbat. So Yatzah, it's right there. That's where that war is. Not only that, they conquer the entire land of Emori. They destroy them. Between Arnon, the blue line, and everything up to the green line on your map, that's what happens in that war. It's a major war. You follow what happened? That's how the Jewish people end up controlling everything. At least this section, from Nachal Arnon to Nachal Yabok, all the way up, they control the whole area. And if you keep reading the Pesukim, this is borne out. It describes the whole thing, what happened. Now, here's something that happens that is inexplicable. You're Moshe Rabbeinu. You're Bnot Slavchad. They conquered this whole land. Where's the goal? What's the goal? Where are they supposed to go next? Eretz Yisrael, no? Okay, but what do they do next instead? Page 854. Strange. Page 854. Describes, Vayifnu vayalu derech habashan, vayitzei og melech habashan likratam, huvuchol amol lamilchama edrei. Vayomer shem moshel tirauto, kiviyadcha natati oto ved kol amo ved arzo, vasitlo kasher sitl sichon melech hamir shushe b'cheshbon, vayakuto ved bana ved kol amo, ad biotu yishir lo sarid, vayishu ed arzo, vayisu b'nei sov echnu ba'arvot moav, me'evel erden yirecho. Instead of going, when they already conquered this whole area here, they didn't want to conquer it, but they had no choice because they had to get into the land. They just wanted to pass through, but they wouldn't let them. They came to fight them, so they won a defensive war. Now, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jewish people, don't you just want to go into the land of Israel? That's not what they did. Instead, it says that Moshe and the forces over here turn north. The green line is called Mavar Yabok. You know what Mavar Yabok is. Remember Yaakov has a fight with an angel? He crossed over a little brook, a little Mavar, it's not so little. That's Mavar Yabok. That's where it happens. Who's north of it? Another king, Og, Melech HaBashan. He's north. And the picture that I have on the cover, that's the direction where Og, Melech HaBashan is located. It's inexplicable. What are they doing? Why don't they just go straight into the land of Israel? They're there. And Moshe's worried because he's turned a little bit farther north, not to fight Og, something he's going north for some reason, and Og comes out with all the forces to attack them. So what do they do? He's nervous. Kadosh Baruch Hu, well, what should we do? Hashem tells him, don't worry, you'll conquer him like you conquered Sichon Mel Chamor. And that's what happens. And that's why in our davening yesterday we said, L'sichon Mel Chamor, Yikilom Chazdo, Log Mel Chabashon, Kilom Chazdo, Natan Atzam L'Nachla, and you gave us their land as part of the heritage, Kilom Chazdo. It's in the Kilom Chazdo. We said every Shabbos, every Yontif, yeah? Okay. Are you with me? Okay, we're not back to Menashe yet, but just I'm giving you the overview. Now turn the page, page 3. This is the seemingly inexplicable move. Here's like the same map. The green line is the same green line. So the green line on this map is the top of the map. So the next one on the flip side page, the same green line is now on the bottom of the map. So it's the same place, not Bar-Yavuk, and everything north, you see what it is. Yeah? You with me? Okay. So now I'm going to move quickly. And I gave you a little inset of where I was standing, which is actually at the UN line, the exact line that the UN drew in 1974, like on the tip of it, literally on the corner. Apparently they don't let people go there, but somehow our group was allowed to go. Now I'll come to one other question. I'm going to try to sew the whole thing up before the shiur ends. And that is this. One of the most boring parts of the Chumash to me, bar none, is census. That's so many people. Oh yeah, I got the numbers. I don't know what to make of the numbers. Okay. But Rav Meidan pointed out something fascinating. There are two times that there's a census that's done in the Book of Amidbar. The first one is in year 2. Before the sin of the spies, the people are about to go into the land of Israel, they have to count the people to go to the war. It says, the Sava. But there's Chet Egel, 38 years past, so in the 40th year, they count the people again. Now they're going to go in, yeah? So there's something fascinating that happens here. It's this very strange thing. If you open up the beginning of the book of Bamidbar, flip to page 730, where am I? 700, I don't want to get it wrong. Where are we? Page 1, page verse 34, page 730. Sick. No, that's wrong. Sorry. Chapter 1. Bamidbar Aleph. Here, page 730. Okay? There's a list of people. All the tribes are listed with the number of people. Okay? You don't have to be a mathematician. You just have to look. Page 730. Menashe's turn comes. How many people are in Menashe? Verse 35. Pasuk Lamed Hay. 32,200 people. In year 2. Okay? Trust me when I tell you that most of the tribes, almost all of them, from Bamidbar, year 2, until Parshat Pinchas from yesterday, there's a little natural increase for most of them. A couple of them have a little bit of a dip, but they're pretty much the same. There's one tribe that's not that way. One tribe that breaks the mold completely. You can guess which one I'm about to tell you. Yeah. So if you turn with me to page 880, you'll notice something that seems to just defy logic. 38 years have gone by. And suddenly in the 40th year, if you look at verse 34 on the bottom of page 880, you'll see a number. The number is 52,700. In other words, a very large increase from 32,000 to 52,000 in the 38-year span. Nobody else has anything close. You could say they were very fruitful, they had many children. It's yacholiot that they just had a lot of children, more so than anybody else. But by a long shot. Yeah, a long shot. By the way, there were losses also. People died in the course of the time in the Midbar. That's why the numbers didn't go up exponentially. So what's going on? Why is it like that? It's a strange thing. And if you look at the list here, page 880, you have Bnei Yosef l'mishpachotam Menashe ve'Ephraim. Bnei Menashe l'machim mishpach l'machiri. U'machir olidat Gilad. Verse 29 on page 880, Pasuk Chavtet. Yeah? Yosef had Menashe. Menashe had Machir. Machir had Gilad. Right? And that's the family of the Gilad. And then there's a whole list of names. And then there's Asriel and Shmidan. And then you have Hefer. And Hefer has a daughter named, a son named Slavchad. And Slavchad has no sons. He has 5 daughters. And we're back to the 5 daughters. Yeah? Okay. So now, think about who Menashe and Ephraim are. And think about who their father is. And remember that Yosef HaTzadik was the viceroy of Egypt. That when Yaakov Avinu dies, he takes Yaakov Avinu after a 70-day mourning period to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. It's strange because if you want to travel from Egypt to Hebron, there are a lot of different highways you can take. But they didn't take any of those highways. They ended up swinging around to something called the Terech HaMelech. And they went to a place called Goren HaAtad, which is listed in the Torah in Sefer Bereishit. We don't have time to see it inside. And they end up crossing the Jordan River, just like the Jewish people were going to do many hundreds of years later. And they go into the land that way. The way the Torah describes it, it is a military transport. Okay? What you may or may not be aware of is that Egypt, a superpower that it was, technologically, also politically and economically, had a lot of sway in what happened in the land of Canaan. They didn't fully control it, but they had a very serious influence It's described in the Torah that when they bring Yaakov Avinu to be buried in Hebron, all the kings are coming. The Midrashim described they're putting their crowns on his bier, right? That they're putting it on the right. Why? Because a mark of respect. This is an honorable person to the Egyptian crown, etc. And this is really a fascinating thing to consider. Also, that at the end of Sefer Bereishit, it tells us something unique about what happened in the life of Yosef HaTzadik, which was maybe true for others, I don't know, but it wasn't mentioned for anybody else. You can find that on page 288, and this is crucial to see. I'm going to sew the whole thing up and I'll leave you with food for thought. 288. Verse 23, page 288, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Yosef lived to see his great-grandchildren from Ephraim. Gam b'nei Machir ben Menashe yuldu al birkei Yosef. Also, the children of Machir, who is the son of Menashe, were born on the knees of Yosef. And then he told his brothers, make sure not to bury me outside of the land of Israel. So we have all these mysteries. Menashe, chosen by Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh, you'll put part of Menashe. You go with Reuven and Gad. We have a mystery about why it is that the Jewish people, in a defensive war, conquered a very large territory on the east bank of the Jordan, but instead of just going into the land of Israel, they seem to be turning northward. And then in the census, the tribe of Menashe, in year 2, is 32,000-something people, 32,200. And by the time you get to the 38 years later, it's mushroomed by over 20,000 people. It's a huge increase. So turn with me to page 4, where I will tell you something that, at the face of it, you will say, it can't be. But I tell you, I think it can be. I think it is. Menashe and Ephraim were princes of the royal crown's viceroy. They had freedom of movement. The children of Menashe, particularly someone named Machir, and his son, who he named not accidentally Gilad, actually created settlements on the east bank of the Jordan in the lifetime of Yosef HaTzadik. So to say it another way, there were lots of Jewish people who had set up shop in the area that today you would call like the southern part of the Golan, the east bank of the Jordan. And then that's why Moshe Rabbeinu has to suddenly turn north. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu tells Reuven and Gad, I'm going to put a part of Menashe with you. Well, they were actually already there. That's why the population suddenly mushrooms in the 40th year. That's why the person is called Gilad, because the area is called Gilad. And if you look, actually, with me, quickly, in the end of Parshat Matot, where it describes the buildup after the two tribes, Reuven and Gad, are going to be staying on the east bank of the Jordan, we learn that Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, he gives them verse 33, page 914, verse 33, 914. Now look at verse 34 to 35. It's a laundry list of names of places that you've never heard of. I've never heard of. Vayivnu bnei Gad et Divon ve'et Atarot ve'et Aroer ve'et Atarot ve'Atarot Shofan ve'et Yazer ve'Yagbaha ve'et Beit Nimra ve'et Beit Haran ve'Arei Mitzar ve'Gidrotzon. All the names of the places that bnei Gad built on the Eber HaYarden. Uvnei Reuven banu. At Cheshbon, at Elalei, at Kiryatayim, at Nevo, at Baal Me'on, Musabot, Shem, at Sivma, at Yikru, at Shemot, Harim, Asher Banu. Can I ask you something? Who didn't build anything? Menashe. Look at the map on page 4. You see all the buildup? Those are the places. That's as far as we know. Those are the places. They're all between Nachal Arnon and Nachal Yabok. Nothing's built up north of Nachal Yabok. You know why? Because it's already built. Look at verse 39. And ask yourself, is that happening at this very moment? Vayelchu b'nei Machir ben Menashe. Remember? Menashe's great, Yosef's great-great-grandchildren are on his lap. He meets them. So, Vayelchu b'nei Machir ben Menashe, Gilada, Vayilkiduha, Vayorash et Emori Asher Ba. B'nei Machir went to Gilad, the area of the Gilad, and they conquered it, and they took away the Emori who were there. So Rav Meidan argues that didn't happen right at this moment. That already happened a long time ago. Now, Rav Meidan didn't make this up out of whole cloth or Shibi Shvat Haratzion. If you look at the top of page 4, this is from his Sefer Kikarov Elecha, where he tells you what his sources are. Source number 1, a Talmud of Rav Sadia Gaon wrote this. Number 2, there's a Perush of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid writes, V'ayaki tikrana milchama, avi haya mochiach, midivrei hayamim, shekol zman sheyisob b'mitzrayim, hayu lifamim holchim le'eretz Yisrael, al karka Yaakov avinu v'hayu bonim sham krachim. When the Jewish people were in Egypt, before the slavery, they lived a long time in Egypt before the slavery, people would go back to Eretz Yisrael, and they started building yishuvim, and krachim, and cities. V'ani savur, shedavka zera Yosef hayu osin. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid wrote this. I davened last Shabbos, well, 2 Shabbos ago now, in the base Knesset HaChurva, in the old city. You know the Churva Shul? That was originally built by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And it was destroyed, and it was rebuilt, it was destroyed, and rebuilt, and now it's rebuilt. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, the same one. What does he write? I think really, but I learned from my father, he says, is that actually they would go up and they built things. And davka hu zera Yosef hayu osin. V'lenaya reshut mi paro. Kimachmat kavod Yosef, paro noheg kavod, letakenu l'chazek yirushatan, v'ayu mokshivin behen diurin uforin lehem mas. So you know what they did? Menashe was in business. Ephraim was in business. What was the business? They were builders. They were also shepherds. And they took their animals to graze in these places, and they raised money, they shipped back to the crown. It was a business interest. Why is Menashe, where is Menashe north of Mavar Yabok? Very simply, on the Derech HaMelech. It was also an outpost to make sure that whoever's coming from Mesopotamia who wants to get to Egypt has to pass through that road, no matter what, even if you're going to take another road when you get to the land of Canaan. The Yisrael, Hayulahen harbein achalot be'eretz Canaan shel avihem, v'af api shal yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim, hayushochem be'eretz Canaan, atakein lehem sadu kramim shelahem, v'ayukotsum u'botsum u'vim lehem kasef. Even though the Jewish people were in Egypt, they were still sending messages back to Eretz Canaan. And they were getting the fields ready. They were getting the vineyards ready. They were sending people back and forth. That wasn't everybody. But who had a privilege? Who had the passport who could do it? Ephraim and Menashe. Because they're part of the royal family. The viceroy. See? So what happens? What happens? The Jewish people are on Eber HaYarden. And already Og Melech HaBashan has asserted himself. And Nebuch, the B'nai Menashe, who are ever still there, became his serfs. So the Jewish people, what they end up doing when Og comes out again, they were subjugated by Og Melech HaBashan. He was the power monger north of Mavar Yabok, in the area that he'd call like the southern area of the Golan. What happens? The Jewish people liberate the brothers. Shalom Aleichem. What do you think the Menashe, the tribe of Machiri, what are they saying to them? What do we miss? Huh, you missed a few things. It's a bit disturbing on one level because you say, wait a minute, that means they missed the 10 plagues, they missed Kriyat Yamsuf, they missed Matan Torah? Hayitachin? A Jew would miss Matan Torah?
But did they miss the slavery also?
Yeah, they missed the slavery. They were not enslaved. According to this approach, and by the way, I'm saying again, Rav Meidan didn't make it up. Rav Sadia Gaon's Talmud wrote this in his Perush in Divrei Hayamim. Rav Yehuda HaChassid wrote this. It's a mind-bending idea, no? Says Rav Meidan, this might explain, maybe, why it is that in the last book of the Torah, when the Jewish people are already encamped, about to go over the Jordan River, what happens? Moshe starts repeating to them various things. Like what? Like the Ten Commandments again? Like describing in longhand the whole experience at Mamad Har Sinai? Like saying out loud, the Shema Yisrael? Like reminding them, oh, by the way, we had a covenant we made at Har Sinai, but you know what? We're going to make a covenant right now in Arvot Moav. They make a covenant. It's a brit Arvot Moav, the Tochacha, yeah? And what does he tell them? Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem hayom. Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem. Right? Because finally we met each other. Rav Meidan says, look, everybody knows that when the Zionist movement got rolling, there was the first Aliyah, the second Aliyah, there's different waves. The Russians came, the groups came. But you and I, everybody knows that there was a time when the Talmidim of the Gra came to Yerushalayim when it was a backwater and they set up shop in Yerushalayim. By the way, they're the ones who rebuilt the Churva Shul. And everybody knows that Menachem Mendel Vitebsker, the Talmud of the Baal Shem HaKadosh, he also brought Talmidim, and they set up a little yeshuv. Before the big wave came the small groups. Anyway, we have one more minute. Thank you very much, Emma Katz, giving us one more minute. I want to thank you again. I thank you in absentia, but thank you for this opportunity. So I'll show you one other thing, just to sort of fill out the picture. Again, you could walk out of here and say, a Jew wasn't at Har Sinai. How could that be? I don't know. It could be. There's like some other explanation. But look on page 5 to show you one last piece here. I can't show you both of the last pieces. One of the last pieces. Ephraim. In Ephraim. You know, Mizrach and Ephraim. Himself, in his lifetime. Divrei HaYamim, for those who don't know, it's the end of Tanakh. Nobody likes to learn it, because it's like if you don't like a census with numbers, you don't like it. Most of Divrei HaYamim is either a repeat of what you saw in another Sefer, or it's names and names and names. I'm oversimplifying, because there's actually a lot of important information there. But it's hard to study. Look with me in page 5, second paragraph. I put it in blue. Ephraim, it tells you the names of his children. And then it says, V'zavad beno, v'shutala telach beno, v'ezer ve'alad. And then it says, V'haragum anshe gat hanolodim ba'aretz, ki yardula kachat miknehem. V'yitabel Ephraim avihem yamim rabim, v'yavo echav l'nachamo. While Ephraim, ben Yosef, was living, alive, in Mitzrayim, Mistam, he's learning with his father, he's learning with his Zaydi, with Zaydi Yosef, with Zaydi Yaakov, and he's learning with his father, right? Ephraim. But he has a child, in fact children, who are living where? In Eretz Yisrael. And they get killed by people who are in Gat. You've heard of Kiryat Gat and Karmei Gat, Otoy Zor, it's the same area. And there are people, huh?
Gat's on the other, that's all the way to the west.
Yeah, so the Ephraim people, where did they set up shop? That's where they set up shop, for their livestock. It says they got killed. It says that Ephraim's brothers came to console him. And then what does it say? He had another child, and the other child built two places, that child's descendants, built two places. We know where these places are today. Beit Choron HaTachton and Beit Choron HaElyon. We know where they are today. And if you go to Eretz Yisrael today, you can go to these places. You can see them. I mean, it doesn't say like Ephraim's children were here, but it's in the Tanakh that there were actually these Yishuvim. And it's mind-bending to think about this. So you had on one side of the Jordan, you had Ephraim. And on the other side of the Jordan, you had people from Menasheh. And now we understand what it means that they had such a love for Tzion. Such a love that they started setting up shop before anybody else. They made sure we're going to be here. And when we think about what that means for us, it means a long-distance relationship with Eretz Yisrael. The truth is, it's not just us in our day, but it was at the very beginning of Jewish history, even before Mitzrayim, it seems, there are already people who are thinking ahead. We have to try our utmost to get to Eretz Tzion, to be connected to it, to set up the Yishuv, so that when Klal Yisrael will come en masse, we'll be able to greet Klal Yisrael and to have a proper Yishuv HaAretz, that we'll be able to be there as Klal Yisrael. Okay, Ad Kan for today. Have a great day.